Welcome to Funnel Reboot, the podcast that shares ideas on how to upgrade your lead generation. Here is your host, Glenn Schmeltzley.
Hey, Glenn here. Welcome to Funnel Reboot, where we help marketers upgrade their lead generation. The new book we're talking about in our series today is number 15 on the Amazon bestseller list for internet marketing. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that I do this show to share marketing wisdom, and it comes in great things like books that we're using in this current series. If there's a marketing author that you want featured on the show, just mention them on social media with the hashtag SummerMarketingBooks. Alternatively, you can use the funnelreboot.com site. It's got a feedback form, or leave me listener feedback by calling 613-703-7073. You tell me who you want to hear, and I'll do the rest. So about today's show. Not to take anything away from past guests, but if you only listen to one of the 50 interviews that we've done so far, I hope that you choose this one. I think most marketers have heard of the Content Marketing Institute. The public figure at the center of CMI, Joe Polizzi, started it all with a blog post that he wrote way back in 2007 called Why Content Marketing. His hypothesis back then was that companies who put content on the internet would build relationships that blossom into future customers. And he then went about literally putting out content that taught others how to do this. And once they came to the CMI site and they got this free content, he would then sell them everything from newsletters to magazines to training and to the annual Content Marketing World event in Cleveland. Pretty meta, huh? For me personally, the story picks up in 2014 when I started listening to Joe's podcast with Robert Rose. It was called This Old Marketing. And I found that this giving away expertise tactic, I found it quite unorthodox, as I was accustomed to thinking that companies should mainly communicate with their audience through advertising. Listening to them, though, influenced how I've come to see content marketing's value. Now, all the while CMI was evangelizing growing a business on content, Joe didn't keep any secret about how well he was doing with growing his business. Already a best-selling author of several books, he came out in 2015 with Content Inc. That's the book that gave out the blueprint he was using. A year after it came out, he sold CMI to the international events company UBI. Now, he may have finished with CMI, but over the next few years, Joe stayed really close to both corporate and entrepreneurial content creators. And his keen focus on them led him to pitch his publisher on a second edition of the book. And it rounds out the model by sharing the rest of his own journey of monetizing this content-based business, CMI. The second edition that came out this year was amazing to me. I read so many new examples and updates on so many marketing channels. It's a total overhaul of the first edition. This is one high-energy conversation, and I was already pumped to talk with Joe, I'm not going to lie, and it seems, though, that we both got pretty keyed up as we got speaking. So now let's go to this very special conversation with Joe Polizzi. Joe Polizzi, welcome to Funnel Reboot.
Glenn, thanks for having me. It is a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thanks so much. I am talking about Content Inc., and the subtitle of this is Start a Content-First Business, Build a Massive Audience, and Become Radically Successful with Little to No Money. Joe, you know that the big words are going inside the book, right?
I actually tried to figure out how long we could make it before somebody said no. And you know what? You could go pretty long with a subtitle before the publisher says no. And they just said, oh, yeah, it's good. Let's get all the keywords in there. So
the more you know. Oh, boy. But this is the second edition. So and this is important. So I've got to kind of bring people back so they understand this. And first thing that they're going to understand is you're a pretty open guy, right? You tell people, you know, if people want to know who Joe is,
That's not hard.
No, not at all. And my wife is like consistently says nobody cares. Like nobody really wants to know about you. But yeah. I keep telling people, and a few listen, so whatever.
Yeah. That's right. But this is germane because you have a Content Inc. book, and you have two Content Inc. books now because you had a content business. You continue to have a content business. Can you maybe give us the short story on what those businesses are and how the book, you know, lays over that timeline?
Sure. Happy to. By the way, we've got a massive storm coming through as we record this right now. So if you hear stuff in the background, we'll do the best we can. I started in publishing in 2000 at a company called Pent Media. And I was lucky enough to fall into the practice of content marketing. It wasn't called content marketing at the time. It was called custom publishing, custom media, branded content, what have you. And I fell in love with that idea of, oh my gosh, we can actually create valuable, compelling, relevant information and deliver it to a targeted audience so they change their behavior. And I said, well, this sounds like marketing that I want to get into. Mm-hmm. Left that company in 2007, started what became Content Marketing Institute. The biggest thing about CMI was probably our event, Content Marketing World, became the largest physical event for content marketing. My wife and I, we always had plans to sell it. We sold in 2016. I stayed on until the end of 17, took a sabbatical year in 18, wrote a novel called The Will to Die, which is the only novel, by the way, that I can find. And I know you know all about this, Glenn, but it actually stars a marketing agency person, which, by the way, gets into, you know, a murderous conspiracy. I mean, who doesn't if you're a marketing agency person?
Every day.
Yeah. And then decided, you know, after the pandemic and everything going on, the principles of Content Inc., I think, are more important than ever before. You have more people becoming content creators. You have more marketers in organizations that need to understand how to build audiences and how to monetize those audiences. So started another business. Again, at the behest of my wife, The Tilt, started that in April of 2021. And that's basically trying to help content creators understand how to build audiences and then how to generate revenue from those audiences. And here we are again. So I'm basically out of, if I was in retirement, I'm out of retirement now. Right. And, you know, back, you know, spreading the good news about content marketing and how I really believe it is in. Not everyone needs to have a content marketing strategy, not every company, but I believe all innovative growing companies have to have one as part of their growth strategy.
Sure. Okay. So, and let's, we'll dig into that in a little bit because yes, people are asking if, I hope they're no longer asking why content marketing, which is something you addressed back in 2007. But I think the question is, you know, how does it latch on to the business model? What does it mean for an existing company to kind of come to it? But you were using, if I kind of have those dates right, you were using the experiences you had 2007 to 2015, and you baked those into the first edition, right?
Correct. That is okay. Absolutely correct. Because the first edition came out in 2015.
Right. And the process there, people should check it out, and we'll delve into some of the steps, but it basically goes from, you know, zero to hero. It goes from what you need to do if you have no content and no audience to how you have that full, you know, fully implemented model. You said, though, in this edition that there were things that you were brewing, you know, when you and your wife were, you know, planning with CMI to do that, weren't making it into the book because they hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. So take me from the first to the second edition.
Yeah. I mean, so if you understand the timing, so the book Content Inc., the first edition came out in 2015 and we sold the company in 2016. So the whole exit strategy was not it. So and by the way, Content Inc., you're right. I'd be basically, it's a tell all book. We tell our story about how we grew Content Marketing Institute from nothing and became, you know, 2015, we hit almost 10 million in revenues. We talk about in the book, we sold for over $20 million. It worked out very well. It's a fantastic exit. But what most content books or marketing books don't talk about is, okay, what happens then? You know, you built this audience, then what? And so I go through that process. I go through thinking about, okay, what is your exit? How do you think about it? How do you plan for it? How do you strategize around it? We made certain decisions ongoing because we know, okay, these types of products get better multiple than these types of products. We understood that if we had our customers signed up to at least three different content initiatives that we had, let's say a blog, an email newsletter, our print magazine, that they became our best customers. So knowing that, we could become a more profitable entity because, okay, we know we don't just want them to sign up for the blog. We want them to sign up for at least a couple different things because then they become loyal audience members and loyal customers. And then, of course, go through all the pain points of, you know, actually selling the business and go through that whole thing, which was an amazing process, a great learning experience, and also 6 months of hell.
Yeah.
If anybody sells their company, it is never an easy thing to do, but it was always our goal to do that. We wanted to have, you know, forever money. And then we also wanted to make sure that we were around for our kids, which, by the way, you know, as we record this, they're just heading off to college. Both my children will be empty nesters here in 2 weeks. So
amazing.
It's crazy the way this thing happened. Yeah. The whole end of that story. And then what was great in the last 6 years is when I wrote Content Inc. the first time, it was a struggle to get case studies. It was a struggle on the corporate marketing side as well as the individual content creator. We had such luxury in 2020 as I was going out there and interviewing people, because there's so many amazing case studies of not only companies that have built out these huge, amazing content brands, you know, of course, like your Red Bull, like your HubSpot, Sony has done. There's a number of companies that have done this really well, but individual content creators that have turned into content entrepreneurs, they're everywhere now. YouTubers and podcasters and writers that started from nothing and went from zero to in 5 years became, let's just say it, millionaires.
Right.
And it's possible to do that today. And that's where we talk about the Content Inc. process, Glenn, because I really do believe if you start from zero and you give it 5 years, and you focus on, you know, finding your differentiation point, that you can, you know, be financially free if that's your goal. And then if it's not, if you're a corporate marketer, we've got to figure out, okay, well, how are you going to generate multiple lines of revenue by building an audience and basically take your, you know, marketing department that doesn't just become a crutch for sales anymore, that you're actually driving new revenue and new product development into the organization, which I think most marketing groups don't do that. Most corporate, especially on the tech side, you know, marketers are there to drive leads, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's so much more that marketing can do. And I feel it's the most important department in the organization today. And I don't know if a lot of marketers even realize the importance of their role.
Thank you. Yes, I think you're speaking very much to your and my individual past, right? Where that was the mantra. And what we kind of, the shift, and, you know, just told you before we started recording, the shift I had to make was to understand, okay, so don't think of them as individual leads, you know, the whole Glengarry, Glen Ross. I think even some of them hit the trash can. You know, they have lasting, abiding value for you. And as a matter of fact, you know, and we can mention the other book that you and your co-conspirator Robert Rose wrote, Killing Marketing, you make the argument that you can actually flip the whole thing on its head, and that the audience can actually be the, you know, driver of the products.
Well, look, we talk about this example in the book about, just look at a company like Amazon. Love them or hate them, amazing company, right?
Yeah.
They think long term. They don't just want one sale. And I think that's where marketers go wrong. It's like, oh, let's get them in the door and let's sell them something. And then whatever happens to them, yeah. And just everyone listening to this, just think about your personal relationships with the brands that you buy from. that's pretty much it, right? It's like, okay, they'll get you in the door however they do. You find them on Google, maybe through social media or something. Maybe they spam you an email. Whatever happens and you buy something, and then it just goes to die, that relationship. But if you look at a company like Amazon, they want to sell you stuff for the next 100 years. And they don't just want to sell you one type of thing. They want to sell you hundreds of different things on the B2C side, on the B2B side, everything. So that's what they're going for. And what if we thought about that as marketers? It's like, okay, and this is why when I talk to marketers, I try to, especially from a content marketing standpoint, I try to say, don't hold off selling them for as long as you can. I mean, what if you just, all you want to do is build that relationship with them for as long as you can and deliver amazing value every day. If you did that, wow, they're going to be asking to buy things from you. But we're such in a rush, and I get it, right? Because we've got quarterly numbers that we have to hit, and there's so much pressure on the marketing department to drive, you know, new leads and new interest in products. We're like, oh, we got to get this, got to sell. I'm like, wow, it would be great to hold back. That's what I tell content entrepreneurs. I'm like, you know, if you can hold for a while until you get to a minimum viable audience, you will reap so much more value later in the process. And you see this, and I talk about this in the book with Content Inc. or with our model, a Content Marketing Institute. So in 2008, 2009, what maybe we did 60,000, 70,000 in revenue a year. We were dying. I mean, I was losing money like crazy. Once we hit 2010, we're like, oh, okay, a couple hundred thousand. We're starting to look good. 2011, $1 million. 2012, 2.5 million, then four, then we're all the way up to 10. You get hockey stick growth with this type of strategy. So if you're a corporate marketer or you're an individual creator, that's what's waiting for you if right. you build this loyal audience.
Right. And, you know, I think we don't appreciate enough how, you know, word of mouth plays into this. Remember that 70s shampoo commercial, and they told two friends and they told two friends. Sure. So we can definitely see that. I see the book as very much showing the map to get there. So let's say we believe in that. You kind of hit the brakes on us at first, not by telling us to just, you know, scatter and, you know, run and make lots of content, but you take us into the content tilt and a sweet spot. And I'd love to kind of, you know, let's gather around Uncle Joe's knee here and hear and hear him say, because your background, you know, you spent time at a publisher and you're really, you know, rigorous about this. This is not, you know, yes, content is, you know, sharing is caring, but you have to first kind of have a standard that you know, get everybody to rally around in your audience, because, you know, otherwise, you know, if you try to please everybody, you're going to please nobody.
That's exactly right. If content is for everybody, it is absolutely for nobody. And the first two steps of the Content Inc. model, as you said, are the sweet spot and the content tilt. And you need to say that 99% of companies, and this, I mean, I've been blessed to go into multi-billion dollar companies over the years and look at their content strategies. And frankly, content is nobody's job in an organization. Everyone's creating content, but it's nobody's job. Nobody owns that process. And what happens is you have what my friend Doug Kessler calls a mountain of meh. That's generally most companies' content marketing strategy. There's content. It's content run amok. Yes. There's content everywhere on every a topic that somebody in SEO said we've got to cover, that somebody in sales said we need a PDF on this. So you get all kinds of content chaos that does nothing for the organization. It's just, oh, I mean, just if you don't believe me, like type in cloud computing into Google and see what you come up with. And by the way, you'll see some really big companies up there. You'll see Salesforce and Amazon and IBM and Oracle. All talk about their take on cloud computing. And you know what you'll find? It's all the same. I mean, different font sizes and different looks and branding and whatnot, but the content itself is the same. There's no differentiation. And that's, I actually don't know what they're doing with that. I mean, probably somebody says, oh, you got to rank for that. So great, we'll do that. But it's not helpful at all. It's not creating any long-term relationships that way. So we want to start with the sweet spot and the content tilt. The sweet spot is the intersection of, first, what are you good at? Like, what do you have the knowledge or skill level in your organization to even communicate about? And on the other side is, who is your very specific audience? And what is their desire? What keeps them up at night? What are their pain points? Those two things coming together has to be some kind of topic, some kind of strategy, some kind of, this is what we stand for. And we can talk about the content marketing mission in a second, but I like to talk about it after the content tilt. So first of all, you say, okay, here's what we're good at. Here's what our audience wants to hear, needs to hear. This is what they'll help them get a better job if we cover this stuff. And then most companies stop there because they're like, great. Hey, we're good at talking about this. Our audience needs to understand cloud computing. So we're going to write a whole bunch of stuff about cloud computing. Well, the problem is you have 1,000 companies, probably more, talking about that issue in exactly the same way that you're going to talk about it. So what is it going to do for your business? Absolutely nothing. So if you create an email newsletter on it, nobody cares because it's already out there in a million different forms. Podcast, who cares, right? So how do you get people to care? What is your hook? What is your differentiation? And that gets you to the content tilt. And this is what a lot of people don't realize is, and we do this in SEO, right? It's like, it's almost like everyone wants to go after the hard keyword. Everyone wants to go after, oh, we want to be found for this keyword because this is the most important keyword to our business. Like lead generation for marketers, right? Yep. whatever it is, right?
Yep.
Well, that's very hard to do. And you need a lot of money to break through on those types of things. So if you don't have a $1 billion budget to break through on certain things, you need to figure out an area of little to no competition that you actually have to have a chance to break through all that clutter. That's what we call a content tilt. That is your differentiation. So for whatever audience you're talking to, you have to figure out, what can I communicate on a consistent basis that's truly helpful, truly valuable, and actually different that nobody else is doing? And that's what we tried to do with content marketing for Content Marketing Institute. We decided to create a new category and call this whatever this custom publishing, custom media thing was. We said, okay, it's now content marketing. We're going to put a lot of energy behind this. We're going to do a blog. We're going to do a research project. We're going to focus on content marketing becoming a thing. And it worked out fairly well. And HubSpot did this the same thing with inbound marketing.
Sure.
When they started this, they started 06, 07, talking about inbound marketing. And they were at the time, a couple million dollar company.
Yeah.
And today they're worth over $30 billion.
Yeah.
With a B.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is because of this focus on that. So long story short, if you have multiple audiences, if you're a B2B company, you need to do this for each audience you have. You need to focus on what your content tilt is for each audience, or what you will do is you'll throw a lot of money at a lot of different content that has no meaning for a specific audience that you're trying to target.
Right. And you add in the last piece of that diagram being, I'll call it expertise. And I think this is relevant, although I think depending on whether you are on your own or you're part of a larger organization, it changes a bit. But, and we're going to get meta here.
Sure.
Listeners, if you didn't catch, Joe was just getting pretty meta there with you giving Content Marketing Institute's example of how this happened, because Joe's own background, coming from a B2B publisher where he was seeing that people were not paying enough attention to the content and how it was, thanks to the internet, changing sales forever, and allowing people to know, like, and trust who they're going to buy from through the content. So this expertise thing, this is important because you're invested in it. And you started off, personally, you still are invested in it. I'm thinking more for the people in a corporate marketing job. I think it's important, and we're going to get to the mission statement, but that they should check into the culture that is around them. I sure hope that they're in a company where the founder is still present, or that the signature touch of the founder, that fist on the table moment that the founder had when they decided to start has been infused into the culture of the company, because that is going to, like, you have to know what you're talking about. If this is, I think marketers don't appreciate the words thought leadership enough. If you really don't have an expertise around something, get that nailed down, and, you know, or find people in your organization who absolutely have it. And that has to come into these other pieces, because they together form the sweet spot, right?
I think that most marketers who are creating content are focusing way too much on the what and not the why. I think that's right. Exactly what you're talking about is where's the why?
Yep. Why you?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, and I know a lot of CEOs and CMOs that are guilty of this. They'll say, oh, we got to do a podcast. We got to do this Facebook thing, right? Now we got to do TikTok. Where are we going to do some Twitch streaming? Those are all what's. And what's don't matter. Who cares? Unless you have a why, an amazing why. And this is why I love not only the content marketing mission statement, but just your general mission statement. If you go to a general mission statement for any company, it's generally they talk about what they sell, not why they exist. This is where you want to get as a marketer. You want to get into, well, why do we exist? What if we have to solve a problem for our customer without our product? How do we do that? How can we solve that product through information? That's what we're talking about here. And we are going to deliver such value to them that, you know, they may never buy from us, but we are going to deliver this amazing value. A lot of marketers have a tough time with that.
Yeah.
You are basically out to say, we are the leading experts in our niche, and we are going to drive the marketplace. And oh, by the way, we'll sell some products, but we're going to sell a whole lot of other stuff too. We're going to change the way that people do business, because we're talking about this in this way. And I don't care if you're in the sewage industry, if you're an RFID, if you are a stay-at-home mom and you do a food blog, I don't care. It's all the same stuff. You have to figure out why are you spending your time doing this, and what do you want to help your audience achieve in some way? So that gets to, which is really important, and no marketers do this idea of this content mission statement, which is the driver for everything you do from a content creation standpoint. And I actually was giving my first in-person speech a few days ago in a long time, and we talked about the importance of this, and said, before you get into your meetings with your marketing team, with your content creation team, you should review your content mission statement. Because if you're not on point, why are we doing this? And by the way, something might have changed. You might have received some information that's different. So what is a content mission statement? You might say, okay, you're talking about who are we targeting? So who's the who, the specific who? What are we going to deliver to that audience? And then what is the outcome for that audience? So for, you know, the tilt for our new business, I might say, okay, who's the who? We're talking to content creators that want to be content entrepreneurs. That's my who. Very specific who. These are content creators that actually want to build a business off of it. What are we going to be delivering? We're going to be delivering a 2 times per week email newsletter that has exclusive content that they can't find anywhere else. So that's that. And then what is the outcome for that audience? Well, what we want them to achieve is financial freedom. We want them to build their own content empire so that they don't have to work for somebody again, and that they can live whatever life they want, their best life. So those are 3 things. Now, you know this, Glenn, because you've been dealing with this for a long time. I didn't say what we're going to sell.
Right.
I didn't say, there's no KPIs in there. All this is our editorial guiding light. And this is important, because if you don't have that, and the chief marketing officer comes down and says, hey, I want to do that podcast, I want to do that Facebook thing, I want to do that TikTok thing, you have to then run it by your content mission statement and says, if for this audience that we're targeting, and I know B2B might have 6, 7, 9 different audiences. So for this audience, is this right? Yeah. Is this something we want to do? Because if you go against it and say, okay, well, they want to do a mini magazine, and we're going to have the CEO on the cover, and We're going to do this in-depth report on this. Okay, let's take a step back. It's going to this audience. We know that this is what we're good at, what we're talking. We talked about the sweet spot. This is what we're going to deliver. Here's the outcome for that audience. Does this fit?
Yeah.
And then you have to have the courage as a marketer to say, no, this does not fit. This is not worthy of our audience's time, thus not worthy of our time to spend on content. So we can't do that, CEO. Sorry. This doesn't fit.
And so, and they might be displeased at hearing that. But, you know, if we look at the other side of this, and the formula is great. I kind of heard when you wrote it, it boiled down to me as, you know, for an audience of, there's your target,
yep,
who are interested in, you know, addressing a, there's your pain point, yep, you know, that our unique knowledge in expertise, you know, yes, will come through as a focus on, and, you know, there's your tilt, there's your little hook. It's why I think that CMO will actually be happy when you remind them of that is because you can parenthetically say, and we will be the only ones in the world that have this. Right. And uniqueness, differentiation. I mean, that's what we went to marketing school to learn. And, you know, and we were also told, by the way, to operate as a stand-in for our audience. And there it is right in the sentence.
You have to, I mean, marketers are doing so much. We're doing so much stuff today.
It's true.
We're doing so much stuff that we probably shouldn't be doing. We're doing a lot of, you know, we're creating a lot of things and not doing a lot of strategy. So let's just get back to strategy. And when you go to, if you go to your CMO and you say, look, if we do this right and we do this outside of a campaign model, which is means we do this consistently for a long period of time. By the way, there is no such thing as a content marketing campaign.
Correct.
If you say content marketing campaign in your organization, you will show your ignorance.
Yeah.
Because a content marketing program, in essence, goes on forever. It iterates all the time. You change it, but it goes on forever because this is a promise to your customers. If you say to your CMO that this is what we're going to do, and if we do this for the next 12 to 18 to 24 months, we can become the leading informational experts in this area, and we can build a loyal audience from that. And if we do this right, that loyal audience will look to us for anything on this topic. We can sell them anything we want.
So don't
come back. Don't just focus on. And then you'll say, yes, okay, what do you want? You want leads? Sure, this program can give you leads.
Right.
You want to sell more widgets? Sure, we can sell more widgets. But let's look at the big picture here. There's an audience land grab going on right now in corporate marketing. And by the way, people are buying companies. People are trying to grow this organic. They're buying media companies. They're trying to grow it organically, whatever they're trying to do. Because what other choice do we have? We could just interrupt all day long, spend all kinds of marketing on interruptive advertising, which, by the way, I don't have a problem with advertising at all. I think advertising should always be a piece of the puzzle. But you have to capture the value right away with advertising for the most part, especially with digital advertising. But if you have an audience that you're building, that goes on forever. And plus you can monetize it 6, 7, 8 different ways that I think marketers don't necessarily realize, especially look at a company like 3M. You know, they have 50% of their product sales come from new products over the last 3 years. We as marketers think that we're always going to sell the thing that we're selling right now. That doesn't happen. We're always selling new things. Look at Amazon, right? First 3 years, all they sold was books. And then they went to the next thing and added CDs and DVDs. That was after 3 years. And then now today, Amazon literally sells everything. They are the everything store. But that happened over the last 20 years.
Right.
So I think that we're so like, oh, we've got to sell the thing. Well, yeah, we do and we will. But we also want to be the leading informational experts and dominate our industry in the next 5 to 7 years. How do we do that? We can't just do that by marketing the same old way.
Yeah. I'm going to pull you back to one thing where you were talking about advertising and channels. And I think this is an important thing for people. I found I got clarity on it when you were addressing the difference between a platform and a channel. And I know this sounds kind of 101, but I think it does. I think as a person absorbing this stuff on social media, I think it's, you can get confused on, okay, where is the person who designed and architected this Content Inc. model? Where do they want me to go? So can you just differentiate? Because you see most of the stuff on the channel, but where they actually want you to get the stuff is somewhere else.
Well, it's funny because we talked about the sweet spot and the content tilt. It's really important that we go on to the next thing is we actually have to create some content. That's the third step, which is the base. And this, so when you go in and you look at what a marketer is doing, they generally, as we talked, they've got content going everywhere. 6, 7, 10. So different channels. So let's say they have email, they have podcasts, they're doing a Facebook group, they have events, they have research, they have a webinar program. We've got all this stuff. And they're generally not connected with each other. If you want to build a loyal audience, and this is from looking at 200 years of how media companies are built and how and successful content marketing case studies, they start on one channel, deliver one audience to one channel, consistently delivering in that channel over a long period of time.
Like a century of John Deere magazine kind of time?
Something like that. Yeah, I mean, you could get into that, but let's look at... Everybody looks at the poster child of Red Bull Media House as sort of the way that it's done. And I like, they're like, oh, look at all that video. And they're selling their own images now. And they've got their own licensing. And they've got an entertainment group. They're literally doing all the things that they're doing. Well, how'd they start? They started with a magazine. And they delivered that magazine to Formula One racetracks. And then they evolved that magazine to deliver directly to their enthusiasts.
Right.
Now it's Red Bulletin magazine. It still goes out to over 2 million people per month. And then once they built that loyal audience, then they diversified. So look, New York Times started with a newspaper, TED Talks, 15 to 18 minute live in-person talks. Huffington Post started with one blog post. You know, we started at Content Marketing Institute with just a blog, and then we added an email newsletter. And we did that for 3 years. As marketers, we only have so much content creation energy. We only have so many things that we can do. And if you want to truly differentiate and break through the clutter, you have to be amazing at the thing that you do.
Right.
So look at content create. Look at the greatest content creators of our day now. Look at Mr. Beast on YouTube. Look at Joe Rogan and podcasting. That's all they did. Mr. Beast just did daily YouTube videos, right? Joe Rogan just did three times a week, did a podcast. That's all they did until they built a loyal audience and then they diversified. Now Mr. Beast sells cheeseburgers and has a huge hamburger chain. If you're not familiar with Mr. Beast, one of the most popular YouTubers out there, you look up. It's a great story. But started one channel, delivering consistent content over that channel over a long period of time. So here's what happens, and this is why it's tough for corporate marketers. When Robert Rose or I would go in and do a consulting gig with these large billion-dollar companies, and they would say, and by the way, according to Content Marketing Institute research, the average marketer creates content 14 to 16 different ways. Just think about that. Just think of all, and you know that. Anybody listening to this knows how many different ways you're creating content. We go in, they're generally expecting us to do a content audit and recommend things for them to do. But in every case, we recommend for them to stop doing things. Right. Because we would say, oh, you're doing these 14 different things and it's all mediocre. And basically, you're wasting your time. You're not going to see any results. But if we can pare that down from 14 to, say, 5 or 6, and you do these amazingly well and really focus on one or two things that become your thing, your place,
right,
that people want to listen to you, read your stuff. So maybe that becomes an amazing email newsletter or a remarkable podcast or the most amazing YouTube series or, God help us all, this incredible daily TikTok thing that you're doing or Twitch stream, right? Whatever, go on and on. I don't care.
Sure, sure.
But go on and do that thing. Great. And yet you can still be in other channels. Like, you can still do Twitter and LinkedIn and whatever, but really your goal of those other ones is to drive them to the thing that you do and drive them back to the podcast, to the email newsletter, so that you can form that relationship, build that loyal audience. Then they know, like, and trust you. And then you have a customer for life.
Right. And the, I guess, way that you can measure, you know, many of us are kind of bent towards the analytics side, and this is all measurable. You take your channel and you ask yourself, all right, I wanted people using the channel to go and take action and get to the base. So it can be as simple as sign up for the email newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, you know, but you can get a feel for what the content is doing for you by looking very harshly at how well that channel is performing against your content. I'd even argue, this is me, that you can even put ad dollars onto the channel if you are calculating, you know, well, how much return you're going to get for it over on the base. Because again, you can absolutely, and we're going to get to this, figure out what the monetization of each subscriber or person who's, you know, inside your platform is worth to you, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was on a quest when we were at Content Marketing Institute. I was trying to figure out the value of a subscriber. And I really wanted to figure this out because, as you know, I mean, most marketers, once you get them into the funnel, right, you're trying to get them to that product sale so quickly. And what we try to do as content entrepreneurs is once we get them to sign up, we actually don't sell to them for a while. We actually want to get them ingrained in our content, wrap them in content love, if you will. So you want to go ahead and do that. But, this becomes your thing. This becomes, promotion dollars against that. Get people to sign up to this thing. This is an amazing thing. And then show over a long period of time that you've actually built an asset. And that's where I think that if you're a marketer, I want you to stop thinking that you're an expense line and that you're a revenue generator and an asset. You're actually building, and that's what Robert Rosen and I talk about in Killing Marketing, that we believe the marketing department is a profit center in and of itself. Aero Electronics is a really good example. Aero Electronics, Fortune 119 company, $24 billion a year company, whatever they do, they're an electronics distribution company. Yep. They have 52 different brands that target B2B electronics engineers. And they are profitable in every one of those channels. Basically, it's by itself. They sell more electronics stuff. But by itself, they're generating profit from each of those by selling webinars, by creating content for partners, by subscription programs. They're basically a media company and a product and service company. By the way, that's every company now. And that's what I think we've lost. Amazon is a media company and a product and service company. So is Apple. So is Google. Right. So is Oracle. So is all the biggest, most innovative companies are doing this whole thing. Disney, of course, I love Disney. We talk about Disney in the book. Disney started by, if we build an audience, we can get people to go to Disney World. So that's what they did. They built an audience with all their amazing content, films and magazines and comic strips, get them to go to Disney World. And then, of course, now we've got Disney Plus, which is one of the most profitable engines we've ever seen on the face of the earth. That's what we can do as marketers today. But we have to get away from just thinking about selling this widget right now.
Yeah. So you said, you know, the content publishing goes on forever. And a concern I hear from people is, okay, but if I start, and especially if I have this really narrow tilt, like, am I ever going to be able to change it? And oh my goodness, how am I going to keep coming up with topics to talk about? Joe, how many episodes of Content Inc. podcast have you put out?
As of this moment, 300.
Yes. Congrats. And for PNR, this old marketing?
Oh, geez, what are we at? 283, 284, something like that. Yeah.
So I'm kind of hearing you say you're not going to run out if you do one or two important things. I guess one of them would be listen to the audience.
Well, that's the, I mean, we talk about setting up listening posts, forgetting content creation idea. What's a listening post? And I learned this in publishing. I started in publishing in 2000, so 21 years ago. And Jim McDermott, my mentor, said that the job of an editor and a publisher is to set up as many listening posts as you can so you understand the needs and pain points of the audience before anyone else does, so you can cover those things. So what is that today for us? That means, well, yeah, we can talk to our audience. Are we doing some surveys to those audience? Are we emailing audience? You know, you're maybe not going to call an audience member, but you know, for me and my audience, I talk to members of our audience every day. We have a Discord channel where I can communicate and I ask questions all the time. I ask questions on Twitter. I ask questions on LinkedIn. I cover, look at hashtags. I read other articles. The sales team, you should be talking to the sales team and figuring out what channels and pain or what pain points they're running into and let you know. You will never, ever run out, because all you have to do is figure out what pain points your customers are dealing with. And that's what you cover. Now, again, you don't want to do this last minute. If you are a media company now, which you need to be acting like one, you want to make sure that your editorial calendar is way ahead of when you need to publish. So our calendar right now for the Tilt, we're probably 2 months out, which in general, I think is a good rule. If you are 1 month out, okay, I think you can live with that. If you're 1 week out, you've got problems, because you can't do this stuff last minute. You have to sign a content creator to it. You can't just, and this is what happens in most big companies. Like, okay, the blog's going out on Friday. Who's doing this post? Like, where's Bob was supposed to write the article? It's due today. You know, where is it? You know, that article should have been going through production process weeks ago. That doesn't mean you can't add in like breaking news content or something like that. Of course you can, if it fits within your content mission. But you want to make sure you have a production schedule, just like every, because by the way, this, take this seriously. This is a thing, like content production. You're up against 50 million, 100 million individual content creators out there trying to do the same thing as you to build an audience. You want that first party data. You want that subscription information. You better be amazing at what you do. Or, by the way, we didn't mention this, Glenn. You can decide not to do this. Like, you don't have to do
content. You could buy it. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, of course, I love the whole idea. I mean, when we were Content Marketing Institute, we bought three different organizations. We bought an awards program, bought a West Coast event. I believe that if you have the money and the cash, it's much easier to buy. We talked about buying the hustle.
Sure. To your own point, it's 5 years. So is it going to be your 5 years, your next 5 years, or has somebody else already spent 5 years and you're just going to take it?
Yeah. Well, what you're seeing right now, I mean, I've got my list. When I talk to chief marketing officers that really know about what's going on in this industry, they have a list of content creators that are on their that they're building relationships with to possibly purchase. They're looking at purchasing podcasters. They're looking at purchasing, just like a Spotify would, or just like an Apple does. The media companies are doing it. You have to do it as well. Salesforce bought CMO Club not that long ago. These things are happening over and over again. And I don't think we've noticed where you can build it. You need to do it right. It takes 12 to 18 months to really get some good traction. To probably start to see any kind of results at all. Sure. Or if you've got the cash, if you're a marketer, if you can convince your finance person of it, build the case and go out and absolutely buy your property, like Arrow Electronics did. Right. They bought 50 of their 52 media brands. They went out and purchased from a big media publisher and got to that immediately, because, I mean, let's face it, right now, cash in the bank does nothing today. Your organization, no matter how small or big you are, you have to do something with your cash right now, because it's getting no return.
Yeah.
So that's why you're seeing M&A activity in the media and content creation space is off the hook, because you've got to use this cash right now. So might as well use it, buy an audience.
Yeah. Buy or sell. I mean, most marketers haven't thought, oh, I could one day walk down to my finance guy and say, all right, somebody wants this asset that we've been building, and if our strategic direction's going somewhere else, would you like that money?
Well, absolutely.
Right?
No, that's a great point. Look at any media company. I mean, I was with Pent Media for 7 years, and by the time I left, we had about 100 different magazine event properties, all different. And over that time, we probably bought and sold 40 of them and sold. So you're right. You're like, oh, no, what? We don't. The contracting business market, that's not something we want to go in. It's not a part of our future mission anymore. So we are going to sell off that property. Yeah. I could see Red Bull selling off their entertainment division and say, oh, we want to focus more on enthusiast publications and we'd want to get rid of this entertainment division that we've signed up all these bands or properties. It's absolutely going to happen. Amazon's going to do it. They're going to buy and sell. They're mostly in the buying mode right now.
Yeah.
And others are selling. Sure.
But the word that really brought it home for me, you called it an informational annuity. Like that just made it, you know, it took me back to my finance courses where I went, oh, well, of course somebody would buy it because it keeps bringing in money. So, you know, no matter which side of it you're on, you know, the internet lives forever. You know, and you will do this. I need to jump back for a second to that point you said about the processes and how you need to have them, because those processes beget people. And you do a really good job. I think it's a new chapter to devote the roles that you really ought to be thinking about. Yes, maybe when you start, you're wearing all those hats, but you actually break out, you know, the pieces. Quick question on that, because I really urge people to just go get the book and find that out if they're trying to, you know, sort this out. They don't have to struggle. You've laid it out. But there are, I think, some things where depending on the medium where your platform is, you have to figure out kind of your on-air person. Like I can see in the case of an email newsletter, it might even always come out under Joe's name, but it might have had a junior person who, you know, rough draft it. A little bit different in the audio or video world, where that, you know, the tie-in with the actual person. So maybe can you help us understand how a company might be able to, you know, decide or how they want to think about, okay, well, maybe our people don't stay forever. So do we maybe have a duo and, you know, bring in a new person, roll them over from time to time, right?
Well, when you're in the, you know, figuring out the base, you have to ask these questions. So what are we also good at? How do we communicate? I'll give you a really good example. Indium is a company in upstate New York that manufactures industrial soldering equipment. They have really smart engineers on the team. And they were like, okay, well, if we want to be the experts in industrial soldering equipment, we need to have our engineers communicate. One thing, engineers aren't very good at writing. Let's just put it out there. Most engineers are not great writers. So they're like, well, how do we extract that information from our engineers? So they hired an editor. They hired an editor to get that information out of those engineers however they could. Now, those engineers bylined each of those articles. They have about 27 engineers that are blogging on a consistent basis. By the way, their blogging program, from one engineer to another, it's the best marketing initiative they've ever done. And they will absolutely, Rick Short, who runs that program, will tell you that. But these engineers, how do you get that? So the editor would go and interview them. They would send Q&As through email so they could write these things up for them and then publish. So that's how Indium did it. So if you got to look at a company like a Canva went out and got Kai Kawasaki to be their chief evangelist. To start to do podcast. They actually brought somebody in to do this. You might realize that, oh, part of our base, we think that a podcast makes the most sense for this content mission that we're going after. Do we have anybody for this type of hook and this program that we want to? Do we have anybody that does this? Maybe we should go out and hire somebody to do this. Maybe we should go out and buy somebody. So that's when you start to ask those questions when you get to the what.
Yeah.
Once you get to the why, and then when you figure out the what, figure out what you have in-house to do this. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, for the Tilt, my name is on the editorial. At the end of every newsletter, it says, Joe Polizzi was part of this. Well, I mean, I wrote some of an issue three issues ago, but the last two I was not involved in.
Yeah.
And they asked me to look over things here and there. And sometimes I pen an article, but I'm not always a part of it. We've got about 6-7 people on every newsletter putting something in from. We've got a designer, we've got a proofreader, we've got an editor, we've got the operations person that's overseeing all the email. We know we've got the dual headlines that we've got to look at. So you've got a whole process set up just for that. So you want to make sure, again, Once you figure out your why to that particular audience, then you can get into the what and figure out, okay, how do we execute this thing?
There are so many different ways to do it. And there, just again, you've opened yourself and, you know, bared it to us so that we can understand, oh, well, there's Joe's way of doing it too, but I can do it my own way. And that, I think, is the biggest takeaway for me from the book, is that people who can't point to, like you said, you've had the opportunity on consulting gigs to go inside of behemoth companies and see this. And for me, it's, you know, you've come down the mountain with the tablets and you're showing them to us. And I felt, and I think every person who reads this would come away thinking, if this is part of what I'm really meant to do, I now have a much clearer idea of how to do it because I've seen it through someone else's eyes.
Well, hopefully. And I think the other thing is you don't have to do it all yourself. And you shouldn't. You should be outsourcing. I mean, and I learned this from being at Penton Media. When we launched a project for a client, we would do their own custom magazines, newsletters, and things like that. We had the project manager on staff and everything else was outsourced. We found the editor, we found the designer, we found the production team, all that was outsourced. I think you can do the same thing if you want. You could hire all these people. Might be risky to do that at first, but we can go out and find stringers, find contractors, put all this together. I mean, at Content Marketing Institute, we had 26 outside contractors that we loved that were running the whole thing. And they weren't employees. They were actually outside contractors to get this done. And marketers are starting to do this as well, so that you can become a really large, significant media property, but you don't have to have the large, significant staff to do it.
Can't thank you enough. Where can people find out about the book and the other things that you do?
Yeah, I mean, content, thank you. Content Inc. is everywhere. Content-Inc.com is where you can get it directly off my site. And make sure it's the orange cover. Some people purchase the white cover. That's the old version. The orange cover, Content Inc. is the new one. And then, as you said, we talked about the This Old Marketing podcast, the Content Inc. podcast. But my new gig is with thetilt.com. We'd love you to sign up if you want to understand how to create content, build an audience, and monetize that audience. That's all we do at thetilt.com. We launched in April, and that's kind of my new mission in helping people do this and monetize as quickly as possible, because it is, it's not easy. As we talked about, Glenn, it's not easy to do this, but there is a process and there is a way to get it done. And so learn off of the mistakes that we've all made already, and you can not make those mistakes and generate revenue and become a marketing rock star as quickly as possible.
I think it's achievable with your help. Thank you so much for joining me today, Joe.
Glenn, thank you so much.
That's all for today, everyone. If you like what you heard today, and I would really hope that you did, please feel free to share this with someone who should listen to it. Maybe somebody who has outdated ideas about marketing. Look, let's not leave them behind. They have to understand how fundamental content is to this whole thing. And you can get in touch with me if you know another book that, you know, lends its voice to the same thing Joe's saying, or other marketing topics, share it with me. I'd love to do a podcast interview with the author. You can contact me via the website or send me a tweet at Funnel Reboot.
Thanks for listening. Follow the show on Twitter at Funnel Reboot. If you like what you have heard today, please consider leaving a review wherever you get your podcasts.